Boy, you guys were just lightning fast on that one, I am telling you.
Yeah, well, okay.
It is good to be saved, right?
Amen.
And it's good to be in church, right?
Amen.
Now, I'm not even asking you nothing else, so there. I want you to open your Bible to Psalm 90. Psalm 90, a verse that we are all familiar with in some way. Quote it, some form of it. Believe it. Psalm 90, verse 10 says this, "The days of our years..." Doesn't that sound like a soap opera? "The day..." And now, folks, "the days of our years..." "The days of our years are 70, and if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is there strength, labor, and sorrow. For it is soon cut off, and we fly away." Let's pray. Father, we thank you now, God, for your goodness and your grace. Thank you, God, for this book. This is what it's all about. This is what's changed all of our lives. This is what we anchor our lives in, God. This is how we know your will and how we know how you think. So, God, we thank you for this book. I thank you, God, for a church that stands by this book and doesn't correct it, doesn't shoot holes in it, Father. So, Lord, these people today, for whatever they are, I know we're none good, but these folks are friends of your book. And, God, I pray you give them something for their time here. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. It says there that the years of our days, the days of our years are 70, basically 70 years. And then you die. Now, I know people say, "Well, I know people older than 70. Yeah, but the warranty is up at 70. Hold it, hold it. I've always wanted to do damage to this. You know, heaven is going to be... I think heaven's going to be a shooting gallery where all day long all we preachers get to do is shoot these. I've never seen two of them made the same. They got one switch gone one way and one switch gone another, or one switch or two switches, or they go this. One says mute, and that means it's muted, and the other says mute, but it's the other way. And all right. Anyway, so where were we? Oh, 70 years. And you know, like I said, after you're 70, it's harder to get parts. But the fact is this. Here's what this is. This basically is kind of an observation. It's not. This is not a doctrinal message. But if we have 70 years, I tend to be a little analytical. Study things out. And so what I'm doing this morning is dividing our lives into 7 10-year segments. All right. Now, when I tell you 7 10-year segments, that doesn't mean that the day after you're 11, everything changes, and the day after you're 21, everything changes. But somewhere, you know, there ought to be a transition, because it's just like this. You got to grow up sometime, Chris. Anyway, I'm sorry, that just slipped out. But I'll talk to you about your life in 7 10-year segments. The first one, obviously, is 1 to 10. And if I could give a key word, I'll try to give a key word for each one. If I could give you one key word for the ages 1 to 10, play. Kids need to play. I think kids ought to play. I like kids playing. I don't even know in this country, do kids play? You know how I think a kid thinks he's playing outside? Sits on the deck and does his computer game. Yeah, Mom told me I had to play outside. Yeah, the NFL has something like Play 60, or, you know, where they're trying to get kids to play outside 60 minutes. Man, we don't want to be in the house 60 minutes, right? But kids need to play. And I say that for this reason, because more and more we are putting an adult load on the minds of children. I'm not a horse person, don't know that much about them, except that they taste pretty good if they're cooked right. But I know this, if you take a colt, which is a baby horse, and you take and put an adult load on that horse's back, that the bone system, the skeleton of that colt is still soft. It's not made to carry that much of a load, and it'll become swayback. I only saw one swayback horse in my life. It was the ugliest animal I've ever seen. I mean, this thing looked like a U with legs on each side. It was a terrible thing. But the fact is that not only do you make it swayback, but when it is swayback, now it can't carry any load. And I think our society is doing that to the minds of our children. You know, you talk to these kids. Look, nobody should interview a six-year-old and say, now, are you concerned about global warming? Yes, I'm concerned about global warming. What is global warming? That's what they do. You know, when anybody, and I mean anybody, not just the bad guys, everybody wants to get the kids on their side. I don't think you ought to go down see in front of an abortion clinic a bunch of people, you know, pro-abortion, anti-abortion. I think this has got to be one of the wildest things. A kid holding a pro-abortion sign. Hey, kid, do you understand? But I don't think that kid ought to be holding a pro-abortion sign. But across the street, I don't think the other kid ought to be holding an anti-abortion sign. I think both those kids, while their parents are beating each other with their signs, those kids ought to be down at the creek throwing rocks at things. Okay, I can't say what because it's not politically correct. Living things are more fun, though. I will tell you that. Living things are a lot more fun. but guys, we try to get these kids, we put a load on them. No kid should worry about the economy. No kid should worry about global warming. It doesn't even exist, okay? No kid. You know what's happened to many children in our church? You get these parents and they go, this kid is like 8, 7. He goes, you know, you'll never grow up. You'll never get married. Because they're going to haul us off to concentration camps. No wonder these kids leave at 18 years old. It's not because they love sin. It's because they just want a life. And the world says, you want a life? We'll give you a life. That's what it is. And everybody wants to grab a kid and make them on their side. I saw this, it was the coolest thing. It was an anti-meat commercial. And so, and I think, listen, I'm honest, guys. I don't think anybody ought to eat meat. I really don't. Because that would leave more for me. And they had these kids, you know, and they asked this little girl, this little black girl, they said, you know, what's your favorite vegetable? And she said carrots or whatever it was. And they asked this little white kid, you know, little kid, what's your favorite vegetable? And he said whatever it was, you know. And then they had this little black kid. I mean, I love this young kid. They changed their question. Major mistake. Instead of saying, what's your favorite vegetable? They said, do you like vegetables? He said, mm-hmm. They said, what's your favorite vegetable? He said, chicken. I said, that's my favorite vegetable. I like that kid. But people, don't put a load. Don't put a mental load. We take the emotional load that some of you adults are having trouble dealing with. Isn't that right? You take problems that are driving you into the ground, and you lay it on the minds and on the emotional system of someone who is not made to carry that load. Not only does that injure them, but when they are adults, they can't carry an adult load because they've been sway-backed emotionally. So I think you ought to take kids at 1 to 10 and just let them play. In fact, if you want to put anything on them, any responsibility, you know what you want to do? Teach them how to play an instrument. Teach them how to play the piano. Teach them how to play anything but the cello, guys. Did you ever see? Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, I heard a guy practicing the cello one time before church. It was the most amazing illustration because here's what I heard. And I go, what is that? And when I heard his part with the music, it was beautiful. And I realized how every one of us got a little part. It was really cool. That's a sidebar. But just had to get some points with Bryce. But guys, really, really, teach your kids how to play an instrument. I was talking to a young pastor, and he said he had this old man of God, you know, in his church visiting to preach. And he said, tell me some pointers, you know, as a pastor, what should I do? And this old guy said, have all of your girls, your little girls in church, take piano lessons. And this guy, being a typical Bible believer, said, well, why would I do that? The Lord's coming in next year. Do you know some folks have been saying the Lord's coming in the next year for the last 40 years? And in the name of the Lord coming, we don't start anything that takes more than 3 years. We don't start anything. You know why we have let this country go? Because to turn it would take 4 or 5 or 6 years, and we're not going to do anything because we're not going to be here that long. And he said, well, it's going to take a long time, you know, and the Lord's going to come back before they grow up. He said, look, if they learn how to play the piano, those young ladies, they may marry a preacher and be the pastor's wife and play the piano, may be the only piano player in the church, may go to the mission field and play the piano. Our son Nathan, he took this little church up in Idaho. There were six people left. He's running about 55 or 60. No piano player. No piano player. Nobody learned this. Nobody learned. And here's the amazing thing. That guy told me, he said, that was like 10 or 15 years ago that guy gave me that advice. And had he taken that advice, he'd had somebody in his church that had 10 or 15 years of experience playing the piano. So those 1 to 10, and they're not going to want to do it, but they'll be better for it. But other than putting some pressure like that, let them play. Just let them play. Let them do something, okay? And without a helmet. Sometimes when I see a kid riding a bike with a helmet, I think, I hope he falls on his head. I mean, it's not that I dislike the kid, but you know, did you ever invest money in anything and then never use it? The next one is 11 through 20. I have a word. Survive. Survive. Between 11 and 20 are the most deadly years of the human life, the teen years. Teenagers tend to be, they'll try anything, and they tend to be a little self-destructive. If you don't understand that, go on the internet and see how many guys are riding skateboards down metal railings in parks and breaking their legs at the bottom steps. I mean, this is a real genius, okay? He's going to be in Congress someday. If you don't think teenagers, if you don't think those teen years are the deadliest years, then how come every army in the world wants teenagers? You know, I have to laugh. Some of my brethren, you know, they go, well, it's getting bad. You know, we may have to go in the woods. You can go live in the woods, are you? Man, I said, if I had to sleep one night in the woods, I would come out the next day going, please take me. Put me in a nice jail cell with a nice soft concrete floor. Beat me. I don't care. Don't make me stay in the trees again. And they go, well, you know, we just might have to fight them. Fight them. You understand there are kids in every military. These guys will crawl all night through the mud just to kill you in your sleep and wear your ear home on their belt the next morning. And it is a dangerous thing. You know, they get involved in things. You know, kids are making decisions at 14 and 15 that are altering their lives for the rest of their lives. And so those kids have got to survive. They really do. If I could give a word to the parents, and if the kids can get one, it is restraint. Restraint. Kids are unrestrained. I'm talking about teenagers in that age where they are totally unrestrained. They need to be restrained physically. Now, I'm not talking about, boy-girl relationship. I'm talking physically. I like sports, guys, all right? I'm not a sports nut. I'm still hoping Cleveland gets a pro football team. But, and I don't know who plays for who and who's the coach and what anybody's record is. I just watch a game, and I just want to see them, you know, play a game. I like that. But let me tell you, when I was a kid, our parents, you know, of my generation, our parents had us go play Little League ball so we could have fun. Today, parents have their kids play Little League ball because they're grooming them to get to the pros so they can buy them a house. I saw this news story. I am telling you, you talk about child abuse. It says, here's a four-year-old. Showed this four-year-old with a helmet and a football. It said, here's a four-year-old. Will he realize his dream? You think a four-year-old is dreaming about being a football player? You're out of your mind. His dad's dreaming about him being a football player. His dad's dreaming about him having a multi-million-dollar contract. And so you got these kids, brother. They're playing pitcher at the Little League, and they don't go any farther than that, but that shoulder's a problem the rest of their life. You have no idea how many times I come into a church and somebody will say, see that guy right there? Mm-hmm. If he had wanted to play pro ball, he would be. You know what I want to say? If he wanted to play pro ball, he'd be standing right where he is now. This is not a country of 100,000 people. We have a really large pool of talent. You understand that? And if you're sitting right now going, well, I'm going to make it. Do you know how many guys have said, I'm going to make it and didn't make it? You know, I got a guy. Because we flew, we didn't bring our posters. But the guy that does my posters played 8 years pro football. He played 4 for Dallas and 4 for the Redskins. I was telling the guys at breakfast yesterday, that you did hear they are going to change the name of the Washington Redskins. They finally buckled under the pressure. They're going to drop the name Washington because it's such an embarrassment. So much. Nobody wants to be associated with it. Man, if they want to offend somebody, call them the Washington Senators or something, Washington Congressmen. Wouldn't that be a real shame? But and I said, you remember playing? He said, oh, man, he said, I think about it every day. He said, I'm taking painkillers all the time. He said, my body just aches. But can you imagine you get this kid, and he's 11 and 12 and 13 and 14, and he's racking his body, and he's you know, throwing out his arm. You know, he needs to be restrained a little bit. He really does. And I'm telling you, Dad, Mom, get your sights off of that kid's professional career. It, you know, in they said in Vietnam, some father would be trying to sell his teenage daughter to GIs for them to use. We call that prostitution, exploiting his child. Well, what is it when a dad takes his 10, 11, 12-year-old kid and tries to get him ready for pro ball? Isn't he trying to make money off his children? And so a little restraint physically, a little restraint morally. Okay, maybe a lot of restraint morally, but there has to be some moral restraint. Our kids, you know, in our churches, the immorality is a shock. It is a shock. We are no longer different than the world. Not only were, and you know why? Because our kids don't want to be any different from the world. You ever hear this? We've all said it. Here's the world, and here's the church, and the church is always about 25 years behind the world. Wherever the world is today, that's where the church is 25 years there. You ever hear that? That is no longer true. Here's the world, and here's the church. And because of the internet and whatever goes along with it, the church is now about 25 minutes. I'm serious. They're about 25 minutes behind the world and upset for the lag time. They're upset that they're not on the cutting edge. And so you look at all this, the rampant immorality. And, you know, kids are putting stuff on their Facebook pages that, you know what I envision? Some 17-year-old girl today is going to put something on the internet that if the Lord does tarry, maybe 15 or 20 years from now, her little daughter is going to go, Mommy, somebody showed me this. Is that really you? Somebody needed to be restrained morally. So they need to be restrained physically and morally. You ready for this? And spiritually. That's right. Nobody needs a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old theologian. You don't need them. I told you, this guy out in Arizona, he misunderstood his Bible when he was 12 years old. And he has been locked in a time warp ever since. And so you got this kid, he's 32 years old, but in his spiritual brain, he's 12. Nobody should listen to a 12-year-old theologian. The 12-year-old doesn't need to sit down and discuss theology with the guys. Really, again, just let him go out and enjoy life. So 1 to 10 is play, and 11 to 20 is survive. 21 to 30, I hate to say this way, because it sounds, you know, you hear this kind of a term, but it's still, it's the only way I can describe it. Find yourself. You need to find yourself. I was picking up this kid. I picked this kid up hitchhiking one time, and I admit, I do have to find a different way to open a witness with a hitchhiker than just as he gets in the car and you get up to speed, you look over and go, now if you died right now, do you know for a fact you go to heaven? I picked this kid up one time, and I said that, and his hand went to the door handle. And I sped up. I should have gone, you'll be number 12. But I picked this kid up hitchhiking. And I said, where are you going? Where to? He says this. He goes, anywhere, man. I'm just looking for myself. I said, well, you were back there about 5 minutes ago. You know, I wanted to advise him, don't look too hard, because if you found yourself, I mean, from where I'm at, you wouldn't be overly impressed. But from 21 to 30, it is time to find yourself. You know what is amazing? And if you're in your teens and 20s, listen to this very carefully, because I used to think this. I used to think, you know, they always said the retirement age was 65, and that I thought people retired on what they've been saving since they were 18 years old. And if you don't start saving at 18 and 19, at 65, you're going to have nothing. No. Man, an 18-year-old that saves money is boring. Really. I'm not telling them not to do it, but you would be surprised how many people retire on what they've made since they were about 40. That's when they get serious. And very few people, very few men, end their lives in the job that they started their lives in. Okay? Well, maybe at 15, or 18, they started flipping burgers for McDonald's, and now they're there in their 70 because they're the only ones that can do anything when the computer is down. But let me give you an example. Our mailing address is one of my wife's sisters. And her husband had a job when he was in his 20s, you know, and he loaded furniture trucks, worked for a furniture store, you know, strong back, weak mind, that kind of thing. And he loaded furniture trucks. Well, that's a good job for him. It really is. That's where you want a young guy. That's where you want, you know, I have the young guys unload my books out of my truck when I'm someplace. I'm not picking them up. I'd end up on crutches, so I don't mess with them. But you need something like that. And then he said this, after a few years of loading furniture trucks and feeding his family with it, he went to electrical apprentice school and became an electrician. Now, he retired as an electrician, not as a guy loading furniture trucks. You know, I tell people I was a body man because I painted cars and worked at a body shop. But the fact is, I did that till I was about 20. I mean, got out of school at 18 and did it till I was about 20. That's called 3 years. All right, maybe four. I did a little bit down in Pensacola. We owned one house. It had a three-car garage. In fact, I bought my wife the house and me the garage. And I did a little bit of body work, buy a car, fix it up, and sell it. But the fact is, you can hardly call yourself what you did for 2-3 years. You can't call yourself that. And so at some point between that 21 and 30, you need to just find something. It's time to quit drifting, okay? In fact, let me say this for everybody under 30. That's about time to put the computer games away. When I hear 20-something guys saying, "Hey, man, I made it to level 24. Well, you cheated. You went online and found out how to skip 4 levels. Oh, I'm playing this computer game with somebody in France. And you haven't won yet? Get out of here. They didn't surrender. They aren't crying. And so, hey, you know what? You play. I had a guy in my church, and he was brokenhearted. You know what he's brokenhearted about? There were no computer games at that time. He was brokenhearted because when he was little, they didn't have Matchbox cars. And he was just brokenhearted like he missed that. Hey, guys, when I was little, they didn't have Matchbox cars. But I'm not going, I wish I had Matchbox cars. No. Sorry, it wasn't there when I was at the age, and I left it behind. I don't have a problem with some of the computer games. Now, I don't like the demons and the murder. Why do people say, it's strange, this teenage boy walked down the halls of a public school, and as people stepped out, he shot him without remorse. Did you ever see Wolfenstein? Because that's what that game is. Somebody steps out of a room, and you kill him without remorse. And the more you kill, the higher your score. You can't figure out why we're having a problem with that? But even if it's a benign game, you know what my problem is? I mean, I liked it when it was, it was like 3 rules. It was crude. The people were stick figures. Now it takes 3 years to figure out how to play one. That is really a waste of your time. That really is. That is a waste of your time. And so you're going to go ahead, spend all your time learning how to do that. Forget it. Between 21 and 30, find yourself and just get down the road. I had a young man in my church. Or not my church, my youth department. And he got out and he had a carpet laying business. And he'd lay carpet. In fact, he was going to college and he would get done with classes and then lay carpet all night long. You say, oh, and he's still laying carpet? No, I said he's going to college. He was going to college to be a doctor. And he has a thriving practice today. He really does. Say, how'd he start? As a carpet layer. But he didn't stay there. Nothing wrong with, look, if you choose. And one of the things that we've told our young people, especially men, you know, you have to take a step up every time. No, you don't. I was talking to this guy, and I'm not sure they let him use sharp things when he eats. And he goes, I tried to get a job, and they told me I couldn't rise to be the corporate, the CEO, so I didn't get the job. I invested in that company. Men, if you go and you are a punch press operator and you do that for 50 years or 40 years and you feed your family, you put a roof over their head, clothes on their back, food on the table, don't ever let anybody try to convince you that you're not a success. You're a tremendous success, okay? And so in that 21 to 30, quit looking for the windfall. Quit looking for the I'm going to do this and boy, we're going to make it. You know, one of the reasons why I believe our country cannot survive, America can't survive if there are no more Americans. I'm not talking about bringing foreigners in. I'm talking about the people that are here. No more Americans. You know, if my dad was going to give an 18-year-old kid some advice, my dad would tell the 18-year-old kid this: hey, kid, go get a job, work all your life, and when you turn 65, you retire, you have something. Here's what my generation would say: hey, kid, go get a job, work all your life, when you're tired at 65, you'll have something. But don't wait till you're 65 to take a vacation. Take a week off every now and then, enjoy a little bit of life. Go tell an 18-year-old, get a job and work it all your life. And you know what he'll say? Are you out of your mind? Don't you know I'm going to be on American Idol? I am working on a computer game. I was in a church, and this air-brained kid goes, I'm working on a computer game, and when I sell it, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'll bet you he'll be doing that 20 years from now and have nothing. And the breakthrough is always next week. And so when Americans, and I mean all Americans are hoping for windfall wealth. The lotteries, yeah, gambling is bad, but we're gambling. The lotteries really hurt. If you didn't have a job and you bought $5 lottery ticket and had the chance of winning $36 million next week, why would you go looking for a job? Oh, did you get a job? Oh, no, man, because I got a lot. The drawings next week, I'm going to get $36 million. You go by and see him and say, hey, did you win? No. But I'm, oh, so you're going to get a job? No, I bought another ticket because now it's $42 million. And it's next week. See him next week. Hey, did you win? No. Well, are you going to go get a job? Oh, I went and got a ticket. And I know you guys saying, well, preacher, we're not playing the lottery. No, you're hoping to get rear-ended. You're hoping to find a cockroach in your Pepsi. Really? You're hoping to get an injury bad enough to sue, but not bad enough to limp. All right? The rest of your life. So from 21 to 30, find yourself. 31 to 40, get established. By the time you're 31, you know, let me explain something. And again, I got a lot of young people here. You got to get these two things. You got to see the difference between having a dream and having a vision. Our society makes having a dream sound so noble. Oh, yes, he has a dream. Let me tell you the difference between a dream and a vision. A person has a dream. If their dream is ever accomplished, they are the center of attention. It is all about them, you know, stopping the robbery. It is all them saving the kid. It is all about them, you know, making the big thing. Dreamers always have themselves in the center of their dream. And if their dream ever comes true, they're the star of the movie. A visionary, if their vision comes true, everybody else benefits. So what are you talking about? I'm talking about a guy one time that had a vision of electric lights. And we're sitting here right now, and we benefit from his vision coming true. I'm talking about two brothers that had a vision of something flying through the air. And we get this thing about, well, I'm just going to dream. I'm going to try to accomplish my dream. Hey, bucko, by the time you're 31, if that stupid dream hadn't come around, go back in the backyard and bury it. Really give up on the stupid dream. Because you're going to walk around, you're going to dream all of your life and accomplish absolutely nothing. And it's not noble to have a dream. You want to be noble? Get a vision. Think of something you can do where if you manage to succeed, someone else will benefit from your efforts. And so that 31 to 40, you know what you do there? That's where you buy a house. If you haven't bought a house by the time 31, get a house. Get something that is solid. I told you, you'd be surprised how many guys, they retire at 65 with what they've saved only the last 25 years of their life, not since they were 18 years old. I know a guy, I've never talked to this guy, but this preacher friend of mine has a financial advisor. And so mine said invest in Enron. But But anyway, he has this financial advisor, and he said, my financial advisor, if you go to ask him some advice on how to invest, he asks you one question. First question, how old are you? He said, if they're under 40, he won't even talk to them. He will not give advice to anybody under 40. And this preacher said, well, how come you won't give advice to anybody under 40? And he said, because until you're 40, you haven't lost enough money. Until you're 40, you aren't ready to take it serious. You're still looking for the dream. You're still looking for, look, if you this circle and this circle and this circle, if you get these people to sell for you, and then you'll be up at the top. And then you find out that nobody once used erasers. So he said, if they're over 40, he said, now they're serious, and now they'll start taking some advice. Hey, if you ever give anybody advice, preachers give people advice a lot. And I will do anything to give somebody advice. And when they don't take it, I'm not offended. But when they come back for more advice, they're not getting it because I'm not wasting it. When I was teaching at a college back in Ohio, Bible college, young man came in, you know, and he said, I'm having some financial problems. And then he had a bunch of people that he owed money to. And he said, will you help me? I said, yes, but I said, I need two things very honestly from you. He said, what? I said, I need to know everything you owe, every bill that you have. And I need to know every dime that comes in. I don't want you to, not just your job, if there's something else you do. And so he gave me those figures, and I worked out an amortization schedule where this guy would be paying this company, like he'd be putting $25 a week here and $10 a week here and $15 a week here, and he'd pay these guys off. And at the end of the week, for 3 months, he would have $2 left over on his paycheck. Now, I don't know how you think about that, but if you said, oh, man, only two, I'm thinking, praise the Lord, I can pay my bills and have money left over. And I said, and I showed him this, and I said, but after 3 months, you're going to pay this guy, and this guy off. Now you're going to have about 30-some bucks left over every week. But at the end of 3 more months, now 6 months into this, you're going to have this guy and this guy and this guy paid off. You're going to have about $70 left over every week. And then the rest of them will be paid off in the next 6 months. So about 4 months later, he says, can I talk to you? Sure. He said, I need to sit down and talk with you. I need some advice. So what is it? He said, I'm having some financial problems. I said, have you followed that schedule? I worked for hours for this guy. And I don't mind, all right? But I said, have you followed that payment schedule that I gave you? He goes, oh, no, I just couldn't live with that $2 a week left over. He said, but I just wonder if you could help me. I said, no, I tried to help you. I said, I'm not wasting my time. And I'm not wasting my breath. And so this guy, he said, he won't give anybody advice until they're 40. I knew of a pastor. And when he was 40, he started his church about in his late 30s. When he was 40, he had zero in the bank. And the church started putting an annuity away for him. And when he retired at 65, 25 years later, this guy had six figures in the bank. He had in the hundreds of thousands of dollars that he'd saved since he was 40, not since he was 30, not since he was 20, not since the day he got his first job. And see, one of the things about young people is they get this picture that if I don't start saving when I'm really young, and I think it's good to save when you're young, I really do, but that's rare. You give a 20-year-old $1,000, he's not putting it in the bank, and if he does, it ain't lasting. You give a guy 40 years old $1,000, he's going to put it away. You give a 20-year-old $1,000, say, go put it away. He says, that's what I'm going to do. And then you go, well, how's that going? Oh, well, you know, we did need a new washer. Actually, no, I needed a new computer, and I needed the new iPad, and I needed, a flashing light on my phone. I don't know what they needed. And so when you're between 40 or 31 and 40, that is the time to get established. That is the time the childish things should have been gone, and you need to get serious about life. And you need to start putting something away every week. And that means you may have to sacrifice, you know, one burger or something. You know, I hear this all the time at meetings. It's the offering, and they'll say, you know, if you guys would just sacrifice going to McDonald's once a week, you could put something in the offering. And, boy, they'd put it in, too, $1.75. But, you know what I tell them? You can go to McDonald's anytime you want. I still think you can put money in. You can go to McDonald's or whatever you're going to do. I'm telling you, you could still save your money. You just don't need every toy that comes down the pike. And after you're about 30, you shouldn't be so interested in toys. You saw the bumper sticker. The only difference between men and boys is the cost and size of their toys. And where the kid is playing with a Matchbox car, now he's in 30 and he's got a $50,000 truck that he's made $40,000 worth of suspension changes and everything else. And then says, I can't make it financially. So, between 31 and 40, get established. Between 41 and 50, one word, produce. It is time to produce. I call it fire for effect. By the time you're 41, you should have all of that stupid, frivolous kid stuff, teen stuff out of your brain, and you should have done something long enough, and now it is time to produce. I like that. I'm not a poetry person at all. I know that you probably find that hard to believe. But I like that poem, The Builder of Bridges. I always like that poem. This guy comes along, and there's a river or a chasm or whatever it is, and he gets across. Now he's done what he wants to do. He can go on. But instead of going on, he builds a bridge after he's already crossed it. And some guy watched him and said, man, you already got across. Why'd you build a bridge? He said, I want to make it easier for somebody else. Guys, you have to understand that you don't always or should not always be the number one person who profits from your life. Again, one of the things that has been taught to us, and it's through Hollywood and it's through TV, they'll show you the Cadillac and they go, you deserve the best. No, you don't. You deserve hell. Right? And you don't deserve the best. Well, he's got a nice one. I want a nice one. He got to work. You didn't. We've got an entire population, and we've got an entire generation that saw what their parents got through hard work, and they want it through, like, demand. I should just have it. No, you shouldn't. And you never will. And I don't care what you think, the government ain't going to give it to you either. It's not going to give it to you. So when you get to 41 to 50, produce. Now, let me tell you something about 50. I was telling some of the guys here, I said, I had a preacher friend. And he said, pray for my wife. She's really depressed. And I looked at him and I said, I understand. No, he said, I said, what's she depressed about? He said, well, she's going to be turning 40. And she's depressed about turning 40. And I said, oh. I said, tell her not to worry. Because I said, she's going to turn 40. And then just 5 years later, she's going to turn 50. And then just 2 years after that, she's going to turn 60. And he's looking at me like, you can't do math? And I'm looking at him like, I can do math. Guys, I remember it took me forever to get to 40. You know how long it took me to be 40? 40 years. You know, from 40 to 50, I am sure there were only 5 years. I am sure. And here's how 50 was. You know, I mean, I can remember, I wanted to be 40. And it was like, oh, man, there's 40. I'm getting to 40. And then I turned 40. And I said, oh, man, there's 50. It was like being on a train that didn't stop at the station. And there's 50. And boom, about 2 years later, I was 60. Now I'm 1,000. But here's something you got to know. And this is the secret to life, okay? If you're under 50, remember this. And if you don't remember it, you'll remember it when you're 50. After you're 50, every night while you're asleep, your body tries to kill you. It does. And the tragedy is that it takes you all day to get... I mean, if somebody tried to kill you, you know, it'd take a while to get over the shock, wouldn't it? It takes you a day to get over the trauma of your body having tried to kill you last night. Just when you get over it, you got to go back to bed. It's a terrible thing. I said, you know how I view life? My guys, I mean, I enjoy life. I really do. But I don't skip. Oh, let's go through another day. Another challenge. Yeah, called breathing. I'm like, you know, I tell a cat, kick me in the chest. Get my heart started, please. And, here's my view of life. Life, when I see it, it is a polished granite plane at a 45-degree angle, and today's goal is, as I slide toward death, hook a fingernail. I just want to do something to slow the descent. You say, well, that's not very exciting. That's called real. That's called real. And so 41 to 50, you should produce. You really should. You should do something. I think you should leave something behind. I think all of us should leave something behind. I'm not talking about inheritance. I'm not talking about something for your family. Yeah, you should. In fact, could I give you a thought? This book says that a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. My wife and I have three kids. You know how many we're going to have by this time next year? Three kids. Unless I really kill one. Anyway, what I'm saying is, after a while, you know how many kids you got. We have now eight grandchildren. How do you know how many grandchildren you're going to have? If we had $3 million. I got three kids, $3 million. They each get $1 million. You say, you have $3 million? Guys, if we had $3 million, them boys would have killed us by now. But if I got $3 million or $10 million and I give my kids, how do you know how to divide it amongst grandchildren, some of whom are going to be born after you're dead? So how can you leave the right proportion? I was listening to Rush Limbaugh, got the answer, believe it or not, many years ago. Rush Limbaugh was, he was talking, and he said he was talking about his grandfather. His grandfather was a practicing lawyer in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, at 103. 103, he's still practicing law. I think he's dead now. Anyway, and he said, it is my grandfather that I got my conservative values from. That was the inheritance. You know what you leave your grandchildren? Your good name. You leave them some values. Which means, guys, which means, ladies, one little real stupid folly takes that away from your name, that you can't leave that to your grandchildren. So, 41 to 50, fire or produce. I built some houses when I was in college. I like the idea of houses being there that I helped put up. I mean, just something. Do something. Produce something and help people. 51 to 60. At that point, you should teach. I didn't say you don't have to work, but you should teach. Teaching is sharing knowledge. A guy who has done a job to the age of 60 ought to know something about it. Don't you think? You ought to know something. You need a realization, a reality check. Have you ever seen, like, you go through the paint store and it says this house paint is guaranteed for 10 years? No, it's not. Oh, yeah, it says right. No, it's not. Preacher, it says right there. No, I am telling you, it is not. You know what you got to do? You got to read the directions. You have to, like, dip your house in sulfuric acid. The steps that you have to take before you put that paint on so that the 10-year guarantee is valid, nobody does. And when you paint your house and in 3 years it falls off and you go, hey, my paint, I'll be about 7 years. And they go, well, did you wire brush the entire house with bleach like it's said in the directions? No. Well, see, then warranty's not valid. Yeah. That's the truth. I was painting houses, you know, inside, outside, when I was in Bible college. And we'd buy the same paint from the same jobber, put it on the same way every time. I'm talking about inside wall paint. And you know, it's that, like, ivory color, eggshell, whatever you want to call it. You know, every room is that. And we started painting these walls. Now, if you ever saw a wall before you paint it, it's not one color. It's the wall board is kind of a gray. And then there's a white spot where the nail heads are covered. And then there's a white stripe where the seams are. And we always paint it, and it was just fine. Well, we paint it, and you can see through it. And try to paint it again, and you can still see through it. And so my boss, his name is Jim, and Jim called our jobber over, the guy that's been buying paint all these years. And he said, hey, there's something wrong with this paint. And he's showing him, and he goes, this guy. Now, look, you can tell this to a 20-year-old. You don't tell this to a guy that's in his 50s. And he said, well, Jim, did you put it on the way the directions say? And my boss, he said, tell you, here's what we'll do. Let's leave this 5 gallons of paint here and a roller and a handle. And you and me go to lunch. We come back. We'll see if those directions got this room painted. And he goes, I'll get you some new paint. Yeah, I know the directions, okay? And I know, you know, it says do this and do this and do this. But after you did something 60 years, you know what you tell somebody? Yeah, that's how I tell you to do it. You don't want to do that. You know, we got this motorhome, and it has a power hose reel, okay? It reels the hose in, a 50-foot hose. And I'm in Connecticut, and it's 90-some degrees. Believe it or not, it's not freezing that's the hardest thing on them. It is hot weather because you turn the water off inside. You got 80 pounds pressure in this rubber hose in 90-degree weather, and it expands and expands. And it gets, I mean, a hose this big gets this big. Then it gets this bulge. And so we're in the trailer, and we turn on the water, and there's no water. And I look outside, and we've got a fountain. We just blew a 50-foot hose that is connected to my motorhome. And I don't carry tools with me, and there's another guy there with a motorhome. And so we're going to put a new hose on. Now, here's how I think. Okay, I'm sure it's just screwed on. So you just screw off the old hose and screw on the new hose, and wouldn't that be too easy? It is on the reel. First off, you got to cut the end off of it, and you got to clamp it on. But it's not even that easy. It is in a compartment that goes through a little slot about that big, and it's in this compartment. And there is a water filter system you have to take apart and disconnect. There's electric light you have to take off. It was, I think, 3 or 4 hours to get this whole thing loose. And when it's loose, this panel drops down this much. And you have to work over top of this, undoing this clamp, talking to the guy that designed it. And so we spent like 3 or 4 hours. We put this brand new hose on my motorhome. The next day, the new hose blew. And I went over to that guy. I said, you aren't going to believe it, my new hose blew. And he's looking at me like I'm looking at him. You know, I mean, at this age, you don't waste 4 hours. And he said, well, okay, I've got a few hours. I said, no. I said, you got a skill saw? He said, well, I've got a little hand rotary saw. I said, bring it. Remember I told you that little slot? I cut a hole that big. I mean, I could wear baseball gloves and change this hose. We changed that hose, counting cutting the hole, 15 minutes. 15 minutes. So I know what the book says, but after you've done it a few times, you ought to be able. Look, when you've done a job over and over, some kid comes in and you say, what's the matter, kid? Well, you know, I'm trying to do this. He says, I know what it says, but here's how you do it. I'm not talking about a shortcut that takes away from the integrity of the job or cheats anybody, but the guys that design it never have to fix it. They should have to fix it, okay? I think guys that when they build cars, I think they just, when they're all done, in the engine compartment, they just run about a half a dozen sheet metal screws through the fender walls just so when you work, you impale yourself. Look, it's not holding anything on but me. And then you go, whoops, and it, poof, and you just rake down your side. They should make the guy that engineered that fix that, okay? And so by the time you're 51 to 60, you ought to be teaching. Remember my brother-in-law? My brother-in-law that was the guy that loaded furniture trucks that decided I want to be an electrician. So he went to apprentice school, and he got this journeyman electrician who'd been an electrician for all these years, taught him how to be an electrician. And then he went out, and he's an electrician. You know what he's doing today? He is the journeyman who's teaching the apprentices. He's the guy that's teaching the classes that he studied how to be an electrician in. So at some point, you ought to pick up some valuable knowledge and teach. 61 to 70. Now listen carefully because there's a difference. 51 to 60 is teach, in which you share knowledge of a subject, knowledge of a skill. 61 to 70 is instruct. The difference between teaching and instructing, in teaching you share knowledge, in instructing you share wisdom. And by the time you're over 60, you ought to have some wisdom. You shouldn't just have those bruises on your forehead And your explanation is, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. You shouldn't, look, you aren't riding a skateboard anywhere, okay? Because that crash helmet, you need to be in a bubble if you're going to go. And so at that age, you can share some wisdom. Not just skills, but, and you know, one of the things I've seen in our generation, or in our churches, the 30-somethings don't care about the 60-somethings. When we were 30, when my wife and I were 30, like 80 years ago, somebody that was 60, and this is not sour grapes, because I don't care what anybody thinks of me, but somebody who was 60 plus, you listen to them. Yeah, they might help you. They might help you avoid one of the bumps on the head. They might help you avoid high legal fees and great marriage problems and church splits. And so we would listen to them and we'd take their advice. I was talking to a 30-something, and he said, "What's the difference between Christianity in the 70s and Christianity now?" I said, "The difference between the 70s and now is that in the 70s, if a guy, a Christian, wasn't living for the Lord, he knew it and wanted to, and said, 'I've got to change. I've got to start living for God,' and sought somebody to help him. In this age, if they're not living for God, they don't even care, and they'll look you in the face and say they don't care. All right, and in our 30s now, they all want the 60-somethings." Not to get out of their way, but they want what they started turned over to them. And it's not Ruckmanite King James guys. I am telling you, it is a generation. I was in California. A guy had 5 staff members, all in their 30s. And he said, "Would you go to lunch with us?" And they want to pick your brain. That's what they say. And I'm there. And this is what a 30-something kid said. He said, "My generation doesn't want to start anything. We want you guys to turn it over to us." And he wasn't demanding, he was recognizing, okay? So if you're like in that 30s and below, that guy that's 60, think about this. He made it to 60, you buried some of your stupid friends. So maybe the guy 60 plus something has something. Share some wisdom. All right? Now you say, "But people do live past 70. Yes, 71 plus. Let me give this to you. 1 to 10, play. 11 to 20, survive. 21 to 30, find yourself. 31 to 40, get established. 41 to 50, produce. 51 to 60, teach. 61 to 70, instruct. 71 plus, we're back to play." No, you're not. No, you're not. You know, if you want to buy a really nice fifth-wheel trailer and a Freightliner to pull it with, 4-door Freightliner. Used to be Trailer Life magazine. I'm sure there's some kind of a classified thing on the internet. But it used to be you'd get Freightliner magazine or Trailer Life magazine and look in the classifieds, and there would be these 3-month-old fifth-wheel trailers, 40-foot, I mean, a Teton Homes. Teton Homes, these are made out of brick. Okay, a Teton Homes trailer lasts forever, but they weigh as much as this building. They cost twice what this building costs. And when you get one, you've got to pull it with this big 4-door Freightliner pickup truck medium diesel truck. And here's what happens. These guys go, "Well, I turned 70. I'm going to retire." And we sold the house, and we're going to just travel all the time. And after 3 months, they said, "We can't do this." They just can't do it. And you know what they found out? They can't play. Just can't play all the time. You know what you do after 70? Keep doing what you've been doing. Keep doing it. I met this man back in the 80s. His name was Vern McQueen. He was 70 plus. Vern McQueen had joined the Army, 18, 19 years old. And he said, "When I joined the Army," he said, "I couldn't do anything." And he told his recruiter, "If I join the Army, will you teach me some skill that I can use all of my life?" And the guy said, "Yeah." Well, he joined the Army, and you know how whatever the recruiter says never gets past him. And so they got this guy doing just menial jobs. He wasn't afraid of being infantry, but guys, you know, unless you're going to work for the CIA or the mafia, killing people isn't a real good vocation. And so He goes into his commanding officer and said, now look, I joined the Army. My recruiter told me, you guys are going to teach me how to do something I can do all my life. He said, now I want you to teach me something. And he says, well, what can you do? Nothing. He said, I have no talent, no skill. He said, that's pretty good. He says, can you drive? He said, no. They made him a driver. Doesn't that make sense? Don't know how to drive? Could he drive Obama? Anyway, but you understand in the military, when they make you a driver, that doesn't mean here's the keys, go jump in the tank and drive. You go to school. You learn everything about tire pressures, axle ratios, spring rating, loads, load distribution, balancing out a load, loading, offloading. This guy went to school. He said, I drove everything from General's cars. He's 20, 25, 30 years. I drove anything from General's cars to 10x10s in the military. He drove everything. That was the one skill that he had. And he got out of the Army, got saved. And he came to this meeting that I was in Washington, D.C. And he said, guys, I can live off my pension, my retirement. I'm living off of it. But he said, I want to do something for God. And he said, I don't have any skill to offer him but one, driving. And here's what the guy did. He got him a Chevy Suburban and a retired U-Haul trailer, utility trailer. And he go down to Faith Track League down there in Cincinnati, Lebanon, Ohio. And he'd load that trailer and he'd load that back seat and the whole back of that Suburban. And he would go down into Mexico and just take churches and missionaries, loads of tracts. Or he'd deliver them across the country. You say, well, that's not much. He only had one thing he could do. And he did it till the day he died. Now, think about this. Couldn't he have gone fishing? He could have spent those years fishing. And hey, he might have caught a big old fish. And wouldn't have a thing for it when he got to the other side. So when you turn 70, now I advise this. You know, that book says when you're 70, you're dead. Well, you know, the years of the life. And I think, and you guys say, well, I'll believe in retirement. Well, you might after your stroke. I say that all the time. I got a guy here who's had a stroke, and I'm so glad your pastor's doing so well. But my son, Nathan, he's pastoring a church that at 50, the pastor had a stroke and had to retire. And he literally built the church down because he tried to stay in the pulpit. Not a bad man at all. He's a good friend. And he'd tell you, he said, I stayed too long. And he ended up retiring at 53. It wasn't his plans. You may end up retiring. You know, here's, well, I'm spending my kids' inheritance. Then you're a fool. You shouldn't be spending your kids' inheritance. You know why we don't like retirement? Because if I retire, if I'm going to retire, I'm going to have to put some money away, and I want to spend it all on fun and games now. That's what we really believe. And so, but here's what I've noticed. I think after about 70, you ought to step aside. Look at how many ministries in history great men have built. And then when it hit 70, they stayed in the reins and they built them back down. I didn't say you have to quit God, you have to get out of the ministry. Just slow the pace down and turn it over to somebody else. Just find somebody can do something. Now, I just want you to see one thing about this verse because there's a strange thing about this verse. Look at verse 10. The days of our years are 70. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is there strength, labor, and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. You know, how old was David when he died? 70. Well, how can a guy that's never lived past 70 talk about living past 70? Look, I don't know about yours, but look at Psalm 90. Look at the word Psalm 90. Does yours say this underneath it? A prayer of Moses, the man of God. I'll bet Moses knew something about getting over 70. Don't you think? Moses wrote this one. I think he could tell you about being 70 and 80 and 90. And so, guys, this isn't a doctrine, but it may help you. It may help you get your feet on the ground. It may help you sort out some values. And it may save you some grief down the road. Maybe save you some money down the road. So let's have a word of prayer. We'll take a break. Lord, we do love you this morning. We really do. That's why these folks are in church, God. They could have found an excuse to not come. So many have found excuses not to come to church. I pray you bless these folks. And I pray something that was said this morning will help them in some way really make a fruitful life for themselves and a fruitful life for you. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. All right, let's take a break.